Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Every time I found myself, you know, getting into that negative spiral, negative self-talk, worries, doubts, I would refer back to my plan and told myself, you know, I seeked out ABC people. They all told me that, you know, this was a problem and this is a solution. So if you keep, you know, working on the solution, then you'll be fine. And just listen to your body. Even if you want to train 3 times a day, like, you can't.
On this episode of The Rundown, I spoke with mental skills coach Camille Charbonneau. She grew up playing rugby and took a liking to weightlifting and martial arts. Charbonneau embraced mindfulness and meditation in order to balance and counter the often aggressive nature of those activities. We go in-depth on topics of mental skills, confidence, self-talk, visualization, stress management, and goal setting, all of which might help you in your own development as an athlete. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to their weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive run events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Just go to iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, the running world lost one of its best a few weeks ago. Pro runner Gabrielle Grunwald passed away in her Minneapolis home on Tuesday, June the 11th, at the age of 32. Grunwald had a long and brave public fight with cancer after she was diagnosed with a rare form called adenoid cystic carcinoma in 2009. Grunwald participated in multiple events despite the treatments, surgery, and therapy. She finished second in the 1500 meter at the 2010 NCAA Championships, won the indoor U.S. 3000 meter championships in 2014, and lined up for the 2017 U.S. Track and Field Championship. Grunwald was an inspiration and touched many lives. She created the foundation Brave Like Gabe to raise awareness and support research for rare forms of cancer. Her goal was to encourage folks to focus on their passion through tough times, remaining positive and strong in her fight against cancer. Her relentless spirit and willingness to share her story will leave a legacy and continue to inspire. Learn more about Brave Like Gabe at bravelikegabe.org. There has been a lot of press surrounding world and Olympic 800-meter champion Caster Semenya and her battle against the IAAF and its implementation of new rules in order to control testosterone levels in female athletes. Despite all of that, Nike stood by their athlete and has released a new Athlete in Progress collection by off-white designer Virgil Abloh. The collection was first teased at a fashion show in Paris last September, with Olympians such as English Gardner, Dina Asher-Smith, and Katarina Johnson-Thompson taking the runway. Semenya is seen in the new commercial wearing the Nike off-white Zoom Terra Kigger 5 shoes. The entire apparel collection will be available globally on June 27th. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run.
In sports and in running, a lot of times you hear that it's all mental. Whether we're training for a 5K, 10K, half, full, or any other types of sports. And today, we have in a mental skills coach. I'd like to welcome Cam to The Rundown.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good. How was your sprint into the...
It was really hot out there. Maybe I shouldn't have sprinted.
Yeah?
But I felt good.
You don't live too far.
No, 2 kilometers. It was pretty quick, quicker than usual. So I'm proud of that.
Awesome. Mentally, you were okay?
Yeah, I was thinking about that on the way here. I'm like, oh, I'm tired, I'm hot, but you know, let's keep the knees up. And I tried to focus on something else.
Okay, there you go. A little tip right from the start.
There you go.
I always like to find out about people and kind of what brings them to the point they're at today. So can you tell us about, like, your childhood? Were you athletic? I know you deal with athletes now, but...
Yeah. I started sport at an early age. I don't know if you want to consider ballet a sport, but I that's where I started when I was in kindergarten, just 1 year. That's all it lasted. Mm. And then in elementary, I was in handball. I did some track, actually. Relay, 400 meter, shot put, long jump, just everything. And then in high school, so I was always in team sport. I got into basketball. So my full-time sport was basketball. And then my coach was like, hey, you should start playing rugby in the off season. Like, you can really excel. So that's what I did. I was playing rugby in the summer and then basketball in the winter. And then in college, I continued to play rugby. So I played for 10 years and I stopped about, I feel like it's been 3 years now. So I played also at the University of Ottawa when I was doing my master's there. I stopped because of a injury, which actually got me scared to play again because I was really scared of hurting myself again. And as a rugby player, if you're scared, well, that's when you get hurt. So I didn't have the mental skills that I do now, but if I did, I probably still would have been playing. Mm-hmm. And then I was always training in the gym, weightlifting. I always liked heavy lifting, but it's kind of impossible to consistently be doing it when you're playing rugby. Otherwise, you're always sore. So this was a great opportunity for me to really lift heavy all the time. So it eventually became something that was easy because I also work in a gym. So I'm just there all the time. I was training twice a day, which is so easy for me. So in my breaks or if a client... would cancel, I would just find myself training all the time. Mm-hmm. And then my boss / mentor challenged me to do a bodybuilding competition. And I'm like, okay, let's do this.
Wow.
So I did that in 2017. I won it. And that was interesting too, because that was a big challenge mentally, since I did have to go on stage, create a routine, you know, be like pretty much naked half naked in front of everyone.
Yeah, a little bikini or something.
Yeah, and that's the only thing that was scaring me. And it's so easy for me to, you know, lift the weights, follow the program, but it was really like the performance on stage that I was worried about. So what I ended up doing was blogging about my whole mental skills journey towards this bodybuilding competition. And you can find it on my website. But every week I was making a blog post and addressing mental skills. And because I was so mentally prepared, I got on stage, and for the first time in all my years of sport leading up to that moment, I got into that kind of that flow state that everyone talks about. And I knew that happened because as soon as I had finished my routine, I was like, did I do this move? Did I do that move? So I totally kind of blanked out because I wasn't thinking, I was just doing. But that's because I was so prepared and confident and, you know, not worried about how people would judge me or think of what I look like. So that was a great experience. Right now, I still train, but I'm not going for another bodybuilding competition anytime soon because that kind of, it changes your relationship to food. There was a negative impact on my mental health after that. So it's 2 years later and I'm still getting over it. Mm. I'm trying to find a balance. So now I'm into Olympic lifting.
Okay, nice.
Started that not this January, but last January. I like to push my limits, learn new things. So that's what I'm doing now. So, and with running, of course. So Olympic lifting and running are my two things.
So like that's quite a range from ballet to team sports. Rugby's really tough and...
Yeah.
Hardcore, like, I don't know, I've been asked to play a bunch of times, but I don't know, something about that impact, but there's that respect factor too, right? My sister played rugby as well.
Oh, and, nice.
But then getting to lifting and competing, like, what kind of, like, what do you think you gravitate more towards, the tougher sports, like the more challenging stuff?
I think so. Oh, I'm also a black belt in karate. Oh, so that happened when I was 12.
Okay, I'll see you later.
And I think I naturally always was a person that was aggressive and liked contact. I ended up quitting karate because it got boring, and all I wanted to do was combat and fighting, and that's not what it is
right.
All about. So with rugby, it was a way for me to get out any anger, any aggression. Basketball too can be pretty, you know, there's a lot of contact with the elbows and stuff. You're able to get aggressive a little bit. But as I learned more about mindfulness and meditation, it did change me. And I think that I don't have the aggressivity, is that a word?
Yeah. You're less aggressive.
I'm less aggressive than I was before. And so when I tried playing rugby after my injury, not only was I scared of getting hurt, but I just wasn't as aggressive. So I decided that it just wasn't for me anymore. And I'm someone who's very intense. I'm usually more black or white. So I think I do gravitate towards like the more intense, all out kind of aggressive sports. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So you mentioned now you have the mental skills. You're obviously a coach. Can you explain a little bit about like the 101 of like what you do kind of thing?
So what is mental skills?
Yeah.
Most people assume it's sports psychology, and they're very similar. I'm not a psychologist because I didn't do clinic work, but the main difference is that what I do is I offer tools and strategies to help performers, athletes, musicians perform consistently. So whereas a sports psychologist did more research, they do clinic work, I really offer hands-on tools that could be applied, you know, at practice right away in training. I'm there on the field with teams. We're similar but different, and we work really well together. So for example, with a runner, and some tools and strategies that I teach athletes would be how to refocus when you're distracted, how to switch negative self-talk to positive self-talk, how to feel confident and prepared so that you perform, how you'd like. I teach athletes how to visualize as well. That helps with preparation and confidence. So there's a lot of different tools and strategies, but the main ones that I do tend to go into is goal setting, self-talk, visualization, energy management, stress management, time management. Yeah.
Okay, nice. And was that always an interest for you, like going through school, or was it, did your background in sports allow you to have access to certain athletes and that created interest? Like, how did you get into this?
So I did my bachelor in physical education. And so we had sports psychology classes, and it was always something that interested me, but I was not down to do any research or write a thesis. But when I graduated, I knew I wanted to continue school, but I still didn't know what I wanted to do. But I knew for sure that I didn't want to write a thesis. And then one of my classmates, was telling me how she thought it would be cool to like be part of the Olympic committee, and to do that you'd have to go through the sport management program at U of Ottawa. And I was like, oh, that seems cool. So I applied, and they only accept 15 people. We both got accepted. So I moved to Ottawa, started that program, which I did not like. It was basically business related to sport, and I'm not someone that has an interest in that realm. I did stay for a semester because I made the rugby team, so I kept the minimum amount of courses. And in that, when I was in sport management, I only had, I think, 3 or 4 classes. One of the classes was a complementary course, and that was, I think it was called Positive Living Skills with Terry Orlick. And this class is when a light bulb went on. Mm. So he is a sports psychologist who worked with many athletes, specifically in winter sports. He's pretty well known in the sports psychology world. And I had this class with him, and it pretty much changed my life. It changed my perspective. And I got to realize that the mental aspect has a huge impact on your performance. And as he was talking about this, I was like, why? I've been playing sports for so long. Why is this the first time that I'm hearing about it? Mm-hmm. And so I got really interested, and I decided that this is something I wanted to learn more about and help others learn about and help them with their performance, whether they were an athlete or not. And then after that, I took a 8-week mindful-based stress reduction course where I learned a lot on meditation and mindfulness, and that also changed my life. And it really helped me manage my stress and learn how to focus and be more in the moment. So the combination of my master's degree and that 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction course really gave me the knowledge, experience, and tools that I have today that I advocate to the people I work with.
Very cool. And how long have you been doing it now?
The mental skills coaching?
Yeah.
Yeah. Since 2015, that's when I graduated. So okay. 4 years, yeah.
Do you think there's a, like going through sports through your whole life, is there, can kids get into this? Like,
yes.
Yeah. When you talk about learning and like, is there, can they start? How soon can they start? I guess my question.
So I worked with people of all ages. And at one point I was working at a daycare and I implemented a positive living skills program with 3 to 5 year olds and they soaked it up like sponges. Obviously I had to, you know, readjust and make it into games. And it wasn't the activities I weren't doing. I was doing with the children wouldn't be the exact same activities I would do or exercises I would do with, you know, teenagers or adults, but there are ways to help children learn how to be more self-aware from a young age, how to look at things in a positive light. And this comes down to more mindfulness. In terms of athletes, I think the youngest athlete that I've worked with, and I'm still working with that person now, I think she's 7 years old. And when you're an elite athlete at a young age, you are soaking this stuff in because you want to be on top. So I think... I think age 5 would probably be a good start.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
So imagine, like, you have all these skills that you learn at age 5 and how if they'll become automatic so much faster than if it's an adult trying to learn it, right? So when you're older, well, you have this mental edge on top of everyone else because you started to learn it before.
Right.
Yeah.
That's cool. And what is there like a particular type of athlete or particular sport that you find benefits more from mental skills coaching or?
No, I think it comes down to performance. I also work with musicians and they perform on stage, right? At auditions, at recitals, whether you're in an individual sport or a team sport, you're performing. And you don't have to be an athlete or a musician to be a performer either. We perform at work. We perform sometimes with friends too. We perform when we have at school, when we're, you know, giving an oral presentation. There's so many different aspects of our life where we do have to perform. So the mental skills that I teach transfer to everyday life. Yeah.
That's awesome. So like, and like what's your favorite type of athlete to coach, I guess?
Well, it's usually easier for me when I really understand the sport.
Yeah.
So of course rugby is really awesome because I know exactly what it feels and what they're going through and how they're thinking and what's going on. And I've been working with the McGill Redmond rugby team for about 4 or 5 years now, and it's great. And that's the whole reason why I actually did the half marathon last week. It's right. Because it was the first goal was to have fun and just to do some mental skills research. I've been part of this run community now and for a few months, and I've like fell in love with it, and I really want to help out runners. And the best way for me to do that is to really understand what it's like to have heavy legs, what it's like to go, you know, to run for so long. And I grew up in team sport, and so it's been challenging for me to understand endurance sports. So putting myself in that situation last week really helped with that.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And how was that whole experience for you?
It was okay.
Let's like rewind a little bit. Like, you run in rugby. Like I ran in soccer.
Yeah.
So like running is part of our life, whether we like it or not, kind of thing. And so how did you start running like as a sport?
So I had the opportunity to be part of a Lululemon retreat in October where I was asked to do a mental skills workshop. So I was there with them for the weekend. I said run retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And I I forced myself to do the morning run with them. That was 10 kilometers. And in my head, I was like, wow, this is so long, but I'm going to do it. This will be fine. I'll be in a group. Before that, I would only do 5Ks in the summer just for fun. Like I'd go for a run or a jog for half an hour. But this was the first time I was doing this distance. And I did it and it was fun. And I was like, oh, okay. Like I can do this. Then we did it, I think it was two mornings. Yeah. So on the weekend, I did two PBs, I guess, because yeah. I've never done these distances before. Mm-hmm. And just by pushing myself and, you know, overcoming that challenge with that group of people, it was amazing. And so when the run retreat was over, I decided to keep in touch. And every Sunday I was running with Mile and Miles because I had met Raul at that run retreat. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, this community is awesome. I want to stick around. And if I'm not going to run 10K on my own, I might as well run it in a group because it's so much more fun. And then before you know it, January comes and there's a Strava challenge, like because it's a 40-80 challenge.
Right.
I'm like, okay, I could do 40. Next thing you know, I did the 80. Mm-hmm. And then Leisha challenged me to do a half marathon. I'm like, okay.
She challenged you.
Yeah. I don't know if she was serious, but I like being challenged because I'm pretty confident in my skills and abilities growing up as an athlete. And I believe I can do anything if I put my mind to it. So I was like, okay, let's do this. At first it was a bit tough because I think I did overtrain. I wasn't able to balance the, you know, the squats and the deadlifts and the heavy lifting with running. And so 3 months of that actually, you know, burnt me out a little bit. So then I had to accept the fact that, okay, I need to put what I really like on pause right now to make sure that, you know, I don't get injured. Because what happened was one day I did deadlifts in the morning, then I went out for a 15K run and hurt my knee. And then from that experience, this is probably a whole other story, but it made me realize how important it was to plan recovery and rest and stretching and rolling. And yeah.
Then does the mind skills help you with injuries too? Or like how are you... how do you practice what you preach, basically?
Right. Well, when you have an injury, usually you're scared of hurting yourself again. You're scared of not being able to run again, right? So for me, it really came down to first seeking out help, making sure that I knew what was wrong, which was my patella ended up lifting because just my quads, everything was tight. So basically, I reached out to people, I got help, I made a plan. I trusted the plan and would always, every time I found myself, you know, getting into that negative spiral, negative self-talk, worries, doubts, I would refer back to my plan and told myself, you know, I seeked out A, B, C people. They all told me that, you know, this was a problem and this is a solution. So if you keep, you know, working on the solution, then you'll be fine. And just listen to your body. Even if you want to train 3 times a day, like you can't. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for me, it was really going back to the plan and trusting the plan.
Cool. And then how did the race go? Like, were you able to train leading up to it or?
Right. So I did end up taking, I think 2 weeks, not off. When I first hurt myself, I couldn't even run 400 meters. And then I was slowly building up, listening to my body and everything. I built up wonderfully because I never hurt again, as long as I kept loose and I was stretching. So, of course, in the back of my head, I was like really worried that, oh, what if my knee hurts? Will I be able to do this? And so I really wanted to make sure I would prepare properly just to get a feeling of how it would feel to run for so long. And my longest run had been 14 kilometers only before that, and I really wanted to get in more, like a longer run before the half. So I ended up doing 17 kilometers, but with like stop and go on the mountain with Mile and Miles. But that really gave me a sense of, okay, like, you know, I can expect these cramps here and this to be tight and that to be tight. So with that in mind, it's automatic for me now because I did reflect on my mental skills after the fact. Mm. It's just I automatically tend to go to my breath when I have a negative thought. So, of course, I had thoughts of, oh, my God, this hurts. What do I do? Do I stop? Is it normal? So what I found myself doing was doing a quick body scan of how my body felt and kind of reflecting on, is this pain, you know, pain because you've been running for so long or pain because like you really should stop? And usually it was fine. So then I would refocus on my breath and that would kind of clear out any distracting thoughts. So that was the main thing, just having like a refocus cue or point, which was the breath. Or sometimes for me, I recently changed my stride because apparently I was a heel striker, which is originally why I hurt my knee. So my cues would be, you know, balls of your feet or toes, knees high, lean forward. Those are just some things I'm personally working on. So every time I had a doubt or a worry, I would just do a quick body scan and then revert back to my technical cues to keep me on task and not get kind of carried away with all those, that negative self-talk. Because ultimately, if you're stuck in that negative spiral, it'll probably slow you down.
Right. And I think we all face that. I mean, yeah, at any level of running, whether you're running 5K, 10K, whatever, or ultras, like, well, maybe you just have longer to think about these things or these problems, but they all feel like it feels long when you're new to 5Ks feel long. And if you do 100K, that, you know, that feels long too, or maybe normal, maybe that's your normal. But, what are some of the common threads between runners, like that you're in the community, like, and seeing more and more runners? Is there like a blueprint for like how runners are going to feel throughout a race or through training? Like, is it?
That's a good question. Hard to say because I just got into this community or world. I don't think there is a blueprint because everyone is just so different that it's really about me adapting to that person's needs and wants. And usually what I do is I just do a quick evaluation of their basic mental skills. And I think you were there when I did that small workshop at Lululemon, where I get my client to rate their focus on 10 and their self-awareness on 10. And from there, we decide what to prioritize and we do one at a time, one mental skill at a time, and do kind of a layered approach where once one thing becomes automatic, one tool or strategy becomes automatic, then we add another. I tried when I first started coaching, I tried having more of a structure, more of like a blueprint, like you said, but it didn't work. And I was so focused on following the structure and everyone's just so different and has their own strengths and weaknesses that I found that it wasn't the best way for me to coach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And what are some of the, like, do you see any commonalities, I guess, in some of the athletes you're dealing with?
Yeah, I think the main things are, what I tend to do is, first thing is goal setting. I think it's really important for a coach and their athlete to be on the same page. But so I do a type of goal setting where we really think about the dream goal and then break that down into the smallest little action plan, whether it's like what you need to do on a daily basis to get closer to your goal. And just having that on paper and forcing that athlete to reflect on it makes a huge difference on their motivation, on their preparation, on their confidence. So that one for sure, I do that one with every athlete I work with. After that, I think teaching athletes or even non-athletes how to switch negative self-talk to positive self-talk is really important because we all, you can't get rid of negative self-talk. It will always be there. But the quicker you're aware that it's there, well, then the quicker you can let it go and then, you know, switch it with something more useful and beneficial to your performance. Mm-hmm. And then that trickles into your daily life too. And that's something you can practice outside of your sport, is switching the negative to the positive. And the more you practice it, well, the more automatic it will become. And then that relates to self-awareness. And sometimes it's hard to work with children because they're not as self-aware as adults or teenagers. Of course, everyone is different. But one of the first steps is teaching someone how to develop their self-awareness. And I think it's a journey that we will go through, I think, for our whole lives. It's just, you know, always developing and growing our self-awareness. Because if I ask my client a question and if the answer is I don't know, well, then it's hard for me to help them. So the self-awareness is always the first thing we attack in combination with the goal setting. And then stress management, of course.
Can you explain self-awareness?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So just being more self-aware of how you react to things, why you react to things, if I asked you, can you describe to me your best performance versus worst performance? Most children will not be able to answer that because they haven't reflected on it, therefore they don't remember it. And even some adults I work with don't necessarily remember past performances. So one exercise I give athletes is just starting a journal, just reflecting every time you train, well, what went well and what needs to be improved. And I get them to write it down to create the habit so that, you know, after some time, well, you'll just automatically start thinking about it. And that becomes, I mean, for sure you'll gain self-awareness because now you're reflecting on things that you haven't before. And so when I ask you a question, like, you know, what, describe me your worst versus best, then you'll be able to answer because you've been reflecting and yeah, you remember it.
I'm reflecting now. And yeah. I don't know if I can answer. Like I mean, and performance is a funny thing. Like, is it my best time?
Right.
Is it how I felt? Is it both? Or is, you know, is there an assumption that like, because I had my best time, I felt the best?
It's important that you define what success means. And so what happens is I usually, you know, success for most young athletes will be, going on the podium, number one, gold medal. But then my next question is, well, do you think you can have your best performance but finish fourth or lose, right? And so usually once I ask that, they're like, oh, yeah, I think so. So then that kind of changes your definition of success then, right? Doesn't have to mean that you're winning, and because you don't have control over your opponents or the people around you. So you can perform your best, but you have no control if you're going to be number one or not. Like, you have no idea how that other person is going to perform that day. So
would you suggest like focusing on yourself and like beating your, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why when I sit down and create goals with the athletes I work with, I tell them that the goals have to be in your control. You have to focus on you and they have to be meaningful to you. And it's normal that when they first start talking about goals that they'll talk about aspects that is not in their control, they don't know in the moment that what they're talking about is not in their control. So then I kind of make that clear to them, and then it changes their whole mindset around goal setting and what is success.
I find that the goal setting, I also had an experience with goal setting, like maybe, you know, 3-4 years ago, like I met my coaches at a Lululemon thing, and mm-hmm. yeah, and that they're good at like exposing people to this kind of like everything you're talking about. And I found that, like, I mean, first of all, I don't write much down, and that
better
really,
start.
It helps tremendously.
Yeah.
But it was it done in this exercise. So like, you know, where do you see yourself in 5, 10, 15 years? Like, and then breaking everything down into like you're saying by day, by hour,
yeah.
You know, by yeah. well, hour, by deal. But like, it's so helpful. Like, it led me onto doing some things like I never could have imagined.
Yeah.
And there's still things that I haven't accomplished that are still on that list.
Mm-hmm.
But I find it like super helpful. Like, everything you're saying, it's like,
I force everyone I work with to write things down because most people don't use paper and pen anymore.
Mm.
For some reason, women are more likely to like writing things on paper. But every 100% of the people I work with, once they start writing things down, they're like, oh my God, this is great. Like, when you write things down on paper, your thoughts come out differently. It forces you to reflect in a different way. So I think that's an important reminder.
Yeah, it's not just like on to the next, you know?
Yeah.
Obviously, athletes are so performance driven. Like, I mean, to a certain extent, like we have like people that just want to go out and have fun, and that's like their goal, you know?
Right.
But people that you work with, do they see immediate results, or is this something that they have to work over like a long period of time?
So that's a good question, because many people come to me 1 week out of their competition or race or whatever, and it's a mental skill. So skills need to be practiced. And for a tool or strategy to work, well, it has to become automatic. It took me 2 to 3 years for mindfulness and meditation to become automatic. So if someone's coming to me even a month out of their performance, that is not enough time. Of course, it depends on a lot of things. Depends on, you know, how much you know about mental skills already. Maybe you worked with a coach already. Maybe you do a lot of self-learning. But it does take time. There's so many tools and strategies. And part of it's trial and error, too. You know, my job is to guide my athletes to find the right tools and strategies for them. So sometimes you try things that don't work, and that's okay. But you need to have the time to try things out. And they need those tools and strategies need to work in training before they work in competition, right? You can't expect to try this new thing in competition because it won't work.
Right.
Yeah. So I can't tell you how long, but I guess you can take a guess. But
But it does take time. Like, it takes repetition to kind of
figure
stuff out. And you got to practice it in training.
And even outside of training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's outside of training?
So, for example, if we talk about cognitive restructuring, which is switching negative self-talk to positive self-talk, that's something you can practice all the time. For example, you miss the bus and you're like swearing in your head. That's like useless.
Or out loud.
Or out loud, yeah, whatever. So first step is being self-aware that you are now being negative, being able to let that go and then, you know, just switch to something that's more useful or positive. Like, oh, well, I missed the bus, but, you know, it's sunny out, it's okay. But all that takes practice, and, you know, I can take months teaching someone how to just be more positive and giving them exercises to do as their homework to just, you know, see the positive light, because a lot of us, I think, are more negative than positive sometimes.
That's crazy. Can we go through the process a little bit here?
Yeah.
And try and work through some, maybe my kinks or...
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
So... why don't we talk about what went well with your Boston Marathon?
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like one thing that went really well and then one thing that needs to be improved. But let's start with what needs to be improved, because I like to end with the positive.
Okay.
Okay.
What needs to improve? I think maybe just like knowing, like I've done it a few times. I've done it 3 times. Well, that was my third.
Okay. And, congrats.
Thanks. knowing what I was up against, and I could have maybe planned a little bit better, like strategy wise.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cause like it's known that the course is fast, for the first half, cause it's pretty downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And then you obviously get Newton Hills like coming onto the second half. So I feel like, I went out to try and do a really good, like my best time,
mm-hmm.
but also know that like if you come out too strong, you're going to be, the quads take a pounding, and then it becomes more difficult to hold your speed for the second part of the race.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you have another race coming up or planned? When's your next marathon?
Scheduled is New York in November.
Okay.
Yeah.
So May, June, July, August. Okay. That's like 6-7 months.
Yeah.
So that is enough time for you to start implementing some mental skills to help you with your next performance. So considering that you just said that you need to plan better, so can you be more specific about that? So what can you do in preparation for November to feel more prepared?
Maybe try and simulate what that course will be like. Look at, you know, elevation and the terrain, and just find ways to be stronger, like at the end of your race.
Okay.
As well. I think that's like the first half you feel good. Like I think I feel pretty comfortable now at like a half marathon distance. But the race, people say the race always starts in the second half.
Okay.
So for a half, even it would be like 10K, or like with 10K to go, or the marathon starts at like, you know, 22.
Okay.
Where you have like half the race to go, but it's also, you know, that's where the grind comes in, and by being able to maintain the speed to achieve the goal, you know, I think is the way you need to finish strong, you know?
So in terms of preparation, it's always hard to simulate a training to the actual thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I usually get athletes to do is to purposefully get them to step out of their comfort zone. So you want to mimic any uncomfortableness you would feel in your marathon. How can you simulate that or engineer that so that you can get comfortable being uncomfortable, so that when that happens, well, then you're better at managing your emotions, essentially, right? Mm. Any frustration, any, you know, doubts or worries. And the more you practice being uncomfortable, then yeah, the easier you'll be able to manage it when it happens. Mm. And so that kind of ties in with mindfulness and meditation. I do get every single one of my athletes to develop a practice, because essentially if you learn how to let things go and be more in the moment and refocus, it helps you manage all that. Mm. Yeah. So with you, I'd probably get you to, well, I think what you said about, you know, mapping things out and like really being prepared about what to expect in the course, I think absolutely. Like the more you're prepared, the less worried you'll be and the more you'll be focused. Number two, do you meditate?
I don't really.
Okay. Yeah. This is a great opportunity for me to talk about meditation.
Yeah. Can you talk about it?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So when I say the word meditate around athletes or around anyone, really, everyone has this weird kind of image or thing they think it is, you know. Meditation could help you relax, but I do sell it as a tool for you to learn how to develop your self-awareness and your focus skills. So I learned how to meditate at that course I mentioned before. So for 8 weeks, I was meditating 30 minutes a day. There are different types of meditation. I tend to gravitate towards guided meditation. And I do think that if you're someone who is going to start a meditation practice, a guided meditation is easier. Otherwise, if you're someone who's anxious and stressed, sitting down with your thoughts will be hard. It's not that you're doing it wrong, but it will be very hard for you to like to reset and refocus. So a guided meditation, for example, would be using an app like Headspace. I use Insight Timer. It's free. There's tons of meditations. And you're essentially listening to the guided voice that's perhaps telling you to, you know, focus on your breath, or maybe it's a body scan telling you to be aware of different muscles in your body. And of course, when you're listening to this meditation, your mind will wander. Like, you can't expect your brain to be focused for 5 minutes in a row, or maybe even 1 minute, you know. Mm-hmm. The brain's not made that way. So the purpose is to notice that your brain has wandered. So that's your self-awareness. You notice that it's gone somewhere else. You're thinking about supper. Okay. You're letting that thought go non-judgmentally. So not saying, oh, well, I shouldn't thinking about that. Just accepting that it's there, letting it go. It's okay. And coming back, so refocusing in the moment, and they call it an anchor. Your anchor is right now is the voice, or maybe your anchor is the breath. It's whatever, your anchor is your refocus point. If you don't have an anchor or refocus point, then it's hard to come back to the moment. So earlier when I talked about using the breath, when I noticed, you know, I had worries about, you know, getting hurt during the half last week, my anchor was my breath. So I always came back to my breath to refocus and stay in the moment. So with meditation, you know, a lot of people think you need to meditate for 30 minutes. That's totally unrealistic, especially if you've never done it before. I usually get my clients to start with even a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, and you keep building. So in that 5 minutes, for example, your objective is just to simply trying to stay in the moment. When you're distracted, notice you're distracted, let it go non-judgmentally, and come back to the moment. So it's a constant, you're training your brain to be aware, let go, come back. Be aware, let go, come back. And with practice, that just becomes, you become so quick at noticing your thoughts, whether they're negative or positive, and you get so quick to refocus. Mm. So like I said, I've been practicing this for 2 to 3 years, and now it's just so automatic for me to refocus and use specific cues to be in the moment. And as a coach, it's really important for me to be in the moment, because I speak with, my sessions are an hour long, specifically with the mental skills. Like, I'm constantly listening. So I need to be in the moment and listening and focused all the time. And of course, you know, when I'm talking with someone or even talking with you, my mind will wander. But right now I'm so good at like letting it go and coming back. Otherwise I would be, I would get distracted and our conversation would go somewhere else. But I'm sure your mind has wandered in the...
No, not at all.
Yeah, right.
I'm meditating currently. That's awesome, though. And what's the range? Like, what are the range of people that you're dealing with? Is it like professional and amateur, and like, or is it like someone you focus on? Like, what's the highest profile?
So I've worked with I work with pretty elite athletes. I work with musicians, students, coaches, musicians. Did I say musicians?
Musicians.
I said it earlier.
Yeah. Is that like more performance? Yeah, I guess it's a different level of performance, but like anxiety with...
So specifically with musicians, it's performance anxiety. So it's about teaching them how to, one, be confident, two, how to create a pre-performance routine to make sure they feel ready and confident beforehand. But with students, it's really about... With the student musicians, it's a lot about stress management too. And same thing when I work with the students at McGill. With any university student, it's a lot about stress management and life skills. So yes, we talk about the sport, but at the end of the day, it comes down to, well, they're not performing because they're worried about something else in their life, you know?
How much of an effect does that have on people? Like, I don't ever think of that, you know? Like, mm-hmm. when you're training for something, like, how much can that affect someone's performance? Like, an out of the sport event that has happened,
it can affect them really to a large scale, because if you're thinking about something else instead of focusing 100% on your training, well, then you're taking away from your training. You're not 100% in the moment. You're not putting in the work you should be. So then ultimately it will affect your performance, right? So when I teach athletes stress management tools, that helps with all realms of their life, and then they're able to focus more on their training because they've kind of learned how to manage everything else. So it helps with their training and their performance. But then, you know, if I work with someone who's stressed about performing, it comes back to the meditation and mindfulness and learning how to let things go.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's like, you teach stress management for sport, but you also do the reverse. You treat stress management for life so that they can focus on their training and all that stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
That's really interesting. Is there any other components? I know we spoke about like mindfulness, and we spoke about like meditation and stress and all that stuff. But is there anything that people might not think that they're aware of that you really believe they should be, like, on a daily basis?
One thing that comes up often is just mindset and positivity. And so I like to teach, we call it positive perspectives, but just kind of rewiring your brain, assuming that most people usually, you know, get stuck in the negative, rewiring your brain so that you see the positive in any situation. If it's whether you made a mistake, you failed, or you're losing, you're still able to get out of that and find something positive from whatever happened. So one exercise that I'll give my clients is to create a highlight journal, and that's simply reflecting on your day. And here it's 2-for-1 because you're developing your self-awareness skills as well. Reflect on, even if you had the worst day, reflect on 3 things that made you smile, or 3 things that were just, you know, simple joys. And again, writing it down forces you to reflect upon it. It helps you gather your thoughts. And then ultimately that should become a habit where even though you had, you know, a really crappy training, you're still able to catch things that went well. Because what happens most of the time, especially with athletes, is that when we have a training that doesn't go so well, we're always focused on what didn't go well. It's very rare that I'll work with someone and they'll always be focusing on the things that went well. We tend to, and it's important to reflect on what needs to be improved so we can grow and learn. But most people tend to neglect, to notice their strengths or notice, the little things that actually they did well that day.
Like
their little successes.
The little wins, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah. I think that's, and do you find like these skills that you're teaching people, they're more helpful in training? Because we do most of what we do is training. And I mean, unless you're like playing hockey or like sports like that, where you have games every week, but like for running, like so much of the mental comes into training. Can you make it through that journey so that you could perform well on a race day?
Well, I think, are you asking me if it's, if it's a good tool just for runners.
I'm just saying, like, yeah, because, like, that's more something, like, I run 6 days a week. So, like, the skills that I'm going to acquire, it's going to be more, like, I'm going to practice it mostly in my training so that I can... Is it a mindset different than in a performance for a race, or?
Training compared to race, I mean, no, I think no matter what, you'll still have negative self-talk. I think it's just harder, in my experience now working with runners, it's harder to simulate the same negative self-talk as you would in a race, right? So the best you can do is simulate a training that would bring upon similar self-talk. So if you really hate hills, well, maybe after a long run, you're going to force yourself to run a hill because you know you'll be tired and you'll have negative self-talk, and you can use that opportunity to practice that switch and be more positive. So you really need to engineer suffering and being uncomfortable to practice.
Okay.
Yeah.
You find you're good at that in your own training, or do you push yourself? How hard have you been pushing yourself?
If I have a competition or a race or like a specific goal, I try and do that. Right now, I guess since the half marathon just finished, it's more for fun. I'm learning. Olympic lifting is very technical. So for me, trying to learn something that's so technical, a lot of negative self-talk comes up. So I'm practicing, you know, taking a breath, knowing it's okay if I make mistakes or fail. I'm still learning, and this takes, it's a sport that takes, like, I could probably years to master, and I don't even know if you ever master it, because as you get stronger, you are lifting heavier weight, and perhaps your form changes a little bit, because every time you're lifting something heavier, you need to almost not relearn, but your patterns change, because now you're lifting something that heavy that you've never, you know, you're not used to. So I find myself definitely practicing that switch. I'm someone who focuses more internally, so I need to really be in my bubble and create that space. Whereas if something happens outside of me, I get distracted. So specifically with Olympic lifting, I need to make sure I have my little pre-performance routine, my mental routine to create my bubble, get focused, and then lift. Because if I get distracted, I'm going to screw up. So that's something I'd practice on not a daily basis, because I don't train every day, but like every time I train.
It takes a lot of concentration.
Yeah, but not too much, because if you overthink it, then you're going to screw up. So it's like finding that sweet spot.
Nice. And you find it's more of a challenge because you're used to like the heavier weightlifting and less so with running. Do you find it's easy, your mental state is easier when you're weightlifting versus running, or is it applicable to both? Like, how applicable are these skills to like other aspects of your life, you know? Or to different sports, like
I think it's all the same, and the mental skills, the basic mental skills, are the same. Like no matter what, you know, whether we're talking about me or someone else, I get negative self talk. But when I see a hill in front of me, I don't want to run that hill. Mm-hmm. But I practice. For me, technical cues work. So there's two types of positive self talk. It's technical or motivational. Motivational will be like, okay, I got this, you can do it. That's not me, and that's okay. So my technical cues will be, you know, knees up, head up, and so I'll focus on that when I see a hill. And then outside of my life, if something happens that's really out of my control, and I find myself beating myself up about it, well, it comes back to that switch, you know, kind of first being aware that you have all this negative self talk, and just, you know, seeing the positive in it, or just saying things that are more useful and not causing further doubt and worry. So there's so many opportunities in your daily life, whether in sport or out of sport, to practice making that switch from negative to positive, practicing being self-aware, practicing distraction control, refocusing, mindfulness, meditation, being positive. So to answer your question, I don't think there's, you know, one facet that allows me to practice mental skills more. Mm-hmm. I just tend to use any opportunity to practice it. So it becomes so automatic that I don't have to think about it.
Right. I think it's smart. I think it's like, it just makes you more complete.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of what you're saying, like, I do try and practice on a regular basis, but like, it's only pieces of the puzzle. You know what I mean? So what's your next run goal now? Do you have any?
So the half marathon was fun. It was a nice experience, but that really made me realize how much I truly am passionate about weightlifting.
You missed it.
I missed it so much. I was so excited to squat and deadlift after. And you can't do all this heavy lifting and run. Like, it just, like, your legs will be constantly sore and heavy. And so I did some training on Thursday, and my legs are still sore.
Nice.
From Thursday and Sunday with Mile and Miles, we went on the mountain, and I was like, oh no, negative self-talk. Mm. I'm like, it's fine, it's sunny, we're in a group, like, it's all good.
Oh yeah.
But
it was
so
beautiful Sunday.
It was so nice. So yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to do another half marathon. I'm not interested in doing another marathon because it takes away another marathon. A marathon, because it takes away from the training that I do like, and that's fun for me. I'll continue to run, like, you know, the Sunday runs, all the group stuff, but I can't find myself preparing for long runs, like running 15K on my own. Like, that's just not something that's fun for me. So I was thinking of maybe registering for some 10Ks or trying trail runs just to understand that and, yeah, switch it up a bit. But I think right now my focus is to get back to learning Olympic lifting and hopefully compete, I don't know, maybe in the next year or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
With lifting?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. Is there like regular competitions that take place for this kind of thing, or?
There are, yeah, a few every year. It's funny because I'm so competitive, but I have to accept that if I compete, I'm not going to win, because there's women who have been doing this for so many years that are so much stronger than me, and I'll always be playing catch up. There's a huge mental aspect, of course. So, and on one hand, you know, I have to accept that I probably the likelihood that I come up on top is not very high because I'm just starting. Okay, whereas these girls, other girls, have all these years of experience and they're so strong because of it. But on the other hand, you know, you never know. You know, maybe they're strong, but they're going to choke.
Yeah.
So
maybe.
But it was just another challenge for me, another opportunity to grow and experience something else.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I think you can always evolve and try different things. And I think that's great. And push yourself and be, I always like looking at it that way. You know, one thing I try and do is be positive and with every situation. Like Boston, you asked me about it. It was not my best marathon, but it was my best Boston. So that was my positive twist on it.
I forgot to ask you, what was the best thing that happened?
I mean, we didn't get there. I mean, I think just having like the best of both worlds. Like, the first year I did it, I just enjoyed the crowd. And the second year I did it, I focused on getting through the nasty weather, but I performed well, you know. And then the third year, I performed well and also enjoyed everything that was Boston, you know. And I think that was the real positive, the real win in it all, you know. At the end of the day, like, we're not winning anything. Mm-hmm. I'm on my best day, like, 40 minutes behind the winner, you know. like similar to what you're saying with weightlifting, you know, they've got more experience, they've been doing it for years, they're you know, they have the advantage, you know what I mean? But you know, you still gotta keep working on stuff to be a better version of yourself.
At the end of the day, you're in the Boston Marathon. You know, right. Not many people get to say that.
No,
yeah. Three times.
But we're, you know, I do consider myself, like, I consider it, you know, it is a gift. That I am grateful for it. It's not something I'll ever take for granted, and I'll always remember. You know, but, yeah, you know, I had some good conversations down there, and like, even, you know, it's just a great, a nice place to be. You know, so.
Yeah.
If you can get out there and do one of these crazy events, and,
don't challenge me.
But I really believe it, you know, that anything is possible.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's like a limit to that positivity? You know, to like believing you can really do anything.
Yeah. I mean, you still have to be realistic, right? I think it's important to dream big and, you know, have visions to fuel you and motivate you, but at the same time, you need to be realistic, I think, considering your past, considering perhaps injuries. So I think, and I think that's where like a coach comes in hand as well, is just to kind of help you stay grounded and not just help you with preparation and accountability, but yeah, to help you create realistic goals.
Right.
Yeah.
What are, for anybody that doesn't have a coach and, or doesn't have the means to have a coach, like what are some, like just simple things that you would tell a friend who would like to practice some of these things? What are some, like maybe what your top three things to do on a daily, weekly basis to kind of like maybe just get an idea for what this feels like and see if it can help them whatever their goals are?
That's a good question. Because everyone's so different, it's hard to say, but drawing on my experience with, you know, the amount of people I've been working with, whether you're an athlete or a non-athlete, the first thing that usually helps is starting a meditation practice, just to be more self-aware, to learn how to let things go. And it's something that could be easily put into your schedule. You can almost see it as your brain training for your week. So just as you would schedule, you know, your running, your short runs, your long runs, your sprints, your hills, your sleep, your maybe weight training, you need to put in your brain training. So meditation, I would suggest starting small, 5 minutes once a week. Like I said earlier, there are tons of free applications with guided meditations. And the one that I use, like I said before, is called Insight Timer. And so you can choose what type of meditation you want. Maybe it's guided, maybe it's not guided. You can choose a duration. So you could go in, you know, find a 5-minute guided one that focuses on the breath. And then what my clients have told me is that it's really hard to find something that they like. So the first step is really to take a week or two to figure out which guided meditations you connect with. There's a lot of meditations on imagery as well. I tend to prefer the meditations that talk about the breath, body scans, because that's what I connect to. So I have my bookmarks when I want to meditate. I have my go-tos so I don't spend time fiddling, and because that could get frustrating, and then sometimes you just don't end up meditating. So yeah, first step, just playing with different meditations, figure out what you like, what you don't like, and then putting in that brain training at least once a week, build on that, whether it's, you know, from 5 minutes to 7 minutes, or once a week to five times a week. And then secondly, that's a big one, because it does help you with your focus. It helps you with your, manage your emotions, with your stress. I think confidence is a big one, and that's a bit tricky. Mm-hmm. But I think most people I work with do struggle with staying confident, especially when like a big performance is coming up. So one thing you can do is just take a piece of paper out, write down a list of strengths. If that's hard for you, that's okay. Just maybe get your friend or coaches or people to write down your strengths for you and remind yourself of your strengths on a daily basis. So just get used to remembering what you're good at, because a lot of the times we forget that. So that once that becomes a habit, you'll be really good at pulling yourself up when you don't feel so hot.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting? Like, I find a lot of people don't. Not a lot of people don't, but maybe they don't believe in themselves.
Yeah, no, you're right.
They don't believe that they can do stuff. Like I find that a lot of times that's what takes. That's the little thing that it takes. And what you said about someone else writing, things about you. That's like the same effect essentially. When someone tells you like, "Hey, you should do that. You can do it."
Yeah.
Like that's sometimes all you need.
And just creating, setting yourself for mini successes, and it comes down to those action plans and those goals, and making sure you're noticing when you succeed at things, when you're good at things, because you don't have control over the people that are giving you positive feedback. So learning how to give yourself that positive feedback is super important. So third, I think it goes to self-awareness, and I talked about a reflection journal and just reflecting on one thing that needs to be improved, how, why, and then one thing that you did well how, why, because it's important to know what you've done well so that you can be consistent. And then it comes back down to just performing consistently, right? And I think a lot of performers are perfectionists, and that's just, it's not realistic to want a perfect performance all the time, and it's not going to happen. And then that's when you get stressed and all this pressure builds up because you're expecting something that's not real. So as long as you're training consistently, then you'll perform consistently, assuming that you're addressing the mental as well, right? So it's not just about the technical physical, but it's being consistent with your mental brain training as well.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And so where can people find out more about you, Cam, and kind of where you offer these services and stuff like that?
Yeah, so you can feel free to check me out on Instagram, cam.sharb, cam.charb. I like to give little tools and tips of mental skills all the time. Otherwise, I have a website, peakperform.ca, or you can email me, camille.charbonneau7@gmail.com. But I'm really active on my Instagram, so feel free to even message me there mm-hmm. and chat. Yeah.
Or come out for a run with them.
Yeah. Mile and Miles. Sunday at 9 a.m.
Exactly. It's a nice group.
It is.
And we got a chance to have a few chats on Mount Royal and stuff. It's been really nice. And this is definitely awesome. Like, not something that I'm consciously aware that I'm practicing on a daily basis, but that I'd like to start implementing a little bit more just to, hey, every little bit helps, I think, and anything that we can do to give us an edge and
yep.
either, you know, during a race or during training or just like, just on our our day to day. I think it's a great thing to have. And excuse me again for being sick today. It's you might hear it in my voice. But I really appreciate you coming in today, Cam, and sharing what you've learned and how you help athletes.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It was a pleasure to get all these questions from you and just explain what mental skills is and give examples, because I think most of the time people aren't sure. So I'm glad I had this opportunity to educate.
It's always a good idea. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. Whatever your experience, age, or identity, you're welcome to join us at the base of Mount Royal every Monday at 7 p.m. Just look for the group of smiling faces next to the monument. Some run fast, some run slow. Who you'll meet, you never know. If you want to learn more, visit their website, iamarunner.ca, and check their Instagram, @WRGRuns. Hope to see you out there. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram @LaRundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it. La Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henri, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.